They sent one of their pastors to the mission field, me. So we're real happy about that. Now, I'm only sorry my wife couldn't be here, because if they have to have one of the two of us, she's a lot more fun to have. And she's just a great lady. Did you get a little flavor of Dearborn? I want to show you a little bit more. Could you show the slide or the PowerPoint? Okay, I guess I should say something. This is a $15 million mosque. It's right across from the Ford International Headquarters. It's a Shia mosque. And I have lots of pictures from the inside. This was taken a few years ago, and then they told us, please, no more pictures. But the ones on our display and the ones of people bowing down in prayer, most of them are from this mosque. There's two in Michigan here claiming to be the largest mosque in America, in Dearborn. One's a Shia mosque, and the other's a Sunni mosque, and they each said that they're the biggest one in Michigan. And Governor Granholm came to the grand opening of both of them, or the re-grand opening for the Yemeni mosque. And for each one, she said, oh, this is the jewel of Michigan. She said the same thing at both mosques. I guess she had one speechwriter. Could we have the next one? It has a modest title, doesn't it? The Islamic Center of America. Terry Jones, the pastor who burned the Quran, he had a demonstration in front of this mosque recently. Go ahead. It's a grand-looking mosque. And this is very interesting. Henry Ford, Dearborn is the birthplace of Henry Ford. He first started his plant, I think, in Highland Park, and then he moved it to Dearborn. And at one time, they had 150,000 men working in this factory. That's like a large city. It's like a grand army, right? And he hired many people. At one point, they said any warm body they hired to put in this factory. But he especially liked Arabs because he was anti-Semitic, and he wanted to kind of stick it to the Jewish people. And at first, there were Christian Arabs, and then they developed the community, and then more Arabs come. And in every major metropolitan center, there's a Chinatown. Do you know that? And usually it's the Cantonese that come first, and then the Mandarin speakers come later. But foreigners like to be together. They can speak their language, they can buy their food, and the older people who have a hard time learning the language can be in a community. And so all nationalities do this. It's not just the Americans who are ethnocentric. All people are ethnocentric. It's part of the fall. But Henry Ford laid out this city, and he had this road he called Altar Road, A-L-T-A-R, just for churches. And there was a YMCA in the middle of that, and of course the YMCA lost the C a long time ago, unfortunately. It was, you know, one time was a great evangelistic center, preaching the gospel. D.L. Moody worked with them a lot. They sold that, and someone bought it. They didn't know whom. It was the Muslims. They bought it, and they set up a Muslim youth association, and then they started building this mosque without a building permit. Of course, they had all the plans. They had all the architecture and everything all laid out, but they didn't get a building permit. And the city stopped them, and they said, oh, you're doing this because we're Muslims. You're persecuting us because of our faith. And the city scrambled around and got them a building permit. And so they built this mosque. And so you see two churches to the east and two churches to the west. And of course, this dominates them. It's much bigger than them. Now, does size mean anything? Were they making a statement? Yes, they were, although they say they're not. But they're doing what they think God wants them to do. And God is bringing the nations to us. Next one. And he determined the times and the places. This is the big mosque inside that mosque. Let me show you. Can you see the niche? The rounded place? The imam is standing, or he's kneeling there. That's the direction to Mecca. One of the interesting things is this mosque, this community was a few miles away in an older mosque. And like 20 years before, an airline pilot convinced them they were facing the wrong way for prayer, because they were facing east by southeast. And he said, no, you need to face north or east by northeast, because that is actually the shortest way, because you, if you go closer to the pole, it's shorter. And see, if they're facing the wrong direction, their prayers don't count. And so this was very upsetting to people. And their whole building was lined up one way, and he said, no, you have to change it. So they had to change the direction of prayer. And so when they built this one, they made sure it was east by northeast. And they're praying in that direction. What's written on the wall is the first chapter of the Quran, which many people read in a very Christian way. Let me read that to you. In the name of Allah, and don't be upset about Allah, it's the Arabic word for God, predates Islam. And it's actually related to Elohim, okay? You know, in the New Testament, Paul uses the word theos and theoi and kurios and kurioi. And these are the words for God and Lord. And the Greeks and Romans thought one thing, but they told them what the nature of God is like. So don't be upset about the name Allah, but the concept behind it, they're very different. So it just means God. In the name of Allah or God, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to Allah, the cherisher and sustainer of the worlds, most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Have you heard anything that's not true yet? You do we worship and your aid we seek. Show us the straight way. They mean the upright way. They think of it in the linear way. We think of it as vertical. The way of those whom you have bestowed your grace, the way of those on whom you've bestowed your grace, those whose portion is not wrath, and those who do not go astray. Have you heard anything that's not true? So many people read this in a Christian way, and for a while I did, but that's not what they mean. The Quran does not stand by itself. The Quran comes with a set of interpretation, and that is events in the life of Muhammad. Things that he said, things that he did, questions people ask him and the answers that he gave, things that he said are permissible, the things he said that are forbidden. And those things are written down, and it's called the hadith. How many have heard of that? Hadith. Actually, the plural is ahadith, but some people say hadiths, but it's ahadith. And the hadith explain the Quran. And there's all kinds of literature that explain the Quran. And so, lead us in the way of those that you have given the grace to, not those on whom is wrath. You know what every Muslim means when he says that? On whom is the wrath? Do you know? No. Jews. The Jews. Who are those who are led astray? Us. It's the same word in Arabic as in the translation of the prodigal son, the son who went astray, Ibn Adal, as in the way it is in the Bible, and that's the same word here. So they think of Christians as that. I met a fellow in Akron, Ohio, a Christian who was born in Dearborn to a Palestinian family. He even went to Palestine and got in trouble and was arrested by the Israeli army for throwing stones at the Israeli army and stuff like that. And he said, I grew up believing exactly that the Jews were the ones that are under the wrath of God and that all Christians are deceived. And God used different things, but he kind of went the Josh McDowell route where he said, I'm going to prove the Bible wrong. And so he kept reading and reading and reading and reading, and then he began to find out, like, oh, this evidence is very lopsided here. And after 3 years, he came to Christ. And by then, he was married to his cousin, which is very typical. And he said to her, please, I want you to study this, and I want you to make up your own mind. I want you to make your own choice. In Islam, there's no choice. Islam is all about force. There's no free choice. If your father's a Muslim, you're a Muslim. That's it. You have no choice. The way a Pakistani leader explained this, he said, Islam is not a religion the way Westerners think of religion. Islam is a state. It's a nation. And in your nation, if you're born there, you are a citizen. You can become a citizen or you're born a citizen. But anyone who acts treasonly with treason towards the state, what's the penalty for treason? Death. And he says that's why there's death for apostasy in Islam. And I mean, that's the standard. This guy was an Orthodox teacher, and that's the standard understanding. Well, this man, and his name was Tom Abraham, he came to faith, and he said to his wife, I want you to make up your mind. And however long it takes, I'll just show you what books to read. You can do what you want. And at the end, if you want to choose Christ, you can choose Christ. If you don't want to choose Christ and you want to divorce me, you can divorce me, and I'll pay for, you know, at that time they had one child. And he said, I'll give you your freedom. I'll give you your choice. And if you want to stay a Muslim and stay married to me, you can. And after a year and a half, she also became a believer. And they're precious believers living in Cleveland. But he said, I believe the same thing. Growing up in America, his thinking was, there's no different. People think that in America, they're going to believe differently. They're not. They're not unless they hear the gospel. Islam does not encourage people to assimilate. It restricts people from assimilating. And there's many reasons for that. One of the reasons is that Muhammad plagiarized many things from the Jews. And what did God do to the Jewish people? Did he make them assimilate? No, he said, don't assimilate. In fact, he gave them many strange laws just to keep them peculiar and to keep them isolated so that they couldn't. People could join them, but they had to convert, and it was a very involved conversion to become a Jewish person. That's why in the time of the New Testament, many people who believed the Jews, because the synagogues were scattered all through the Mediterranean world, many of them believed, but they didn't want to convert. They were believers, but they weren't converts. What did they call them? God-fearers. God-fearers. Because they didn't convert to Judaism, but they believed in the Jewish God. Well, the Muslims, they have to eat food that's special. They're not even supposed to come into our homes because we're dirty. And they're afraid that we're going to feed them pig meat, like Pat showed up here, or alcohol, which are both are forbidden for them. And also just our homes are dirty. They're afraid maybe you have a dog in your house, something like that. And so they have all of these things that isolate them, and they can't assimilate. Now, what happened in the church? That's what the Jerusalem Council was about in Acts 15, is that now the Jews don't have to do that anymore. That is, the believers in Christ. And he said those things were for a time, and now that time has been fulfilled. And now the world doesn't have to come to Jerusalem to see the light. You're going to take the light into the world. And you can go into any home and eat what's set before you. All food is clean. He didn't say all food tastes good. He didn't say it's all healthy. But you won't be defiled by it. So go there and receive their hospitality. And you can go and make disciples of all nations. The Jews were so careful about keeping their laws, even when they were killing their most holy prophet. The high priest stood outside of Pilate's house. They didn't want to enter the house of a Gentile and be defiled and not be able to take the Passover. The whole time they're killing Christ. Well, let's look at the next one too. Do you recognize this verse that's being quoted here? The next one. From one man, he made all the nations of the earth, and he determined where they would live and what epochs they would live in. And that includes when they move from place to place. Why did he do that? So that men would grope for God, that they might find God, that they might seek God and perhaps find him, though he's not far from any one of us. Go ahead. I have this picture out there. Our daughter painted this. It was very interesting. We were working with Yemeni and Lebanese at the time. None of the women looked like this. And then just after she painted this, we went to another outreach center, and they were all Yemeni, and all of them looked like this. In written, it says, "Kaif yo'minum b'men lem yesma'u bihi." How can they believe in the one they haven't heard of him? Okay, the next. These are old pictures. Next. Here's something we do that's a lot of fun. And you could do that with us. And it's coming up in December. We go Christmas caroling. And we go into Arab neighborhoods and or into Arab homes, and we sing carols. And it's a really fun time. It's a very positive event for everyone. And we have bags of candy that we give. And usually we have scriptures in there or Christian songs or something like that. And the scriptures are in both Arabic and English. Okay. These were some help projects that we were involved in. This is at our ESL classes. And also, this is Manara people. These are the Manara trainees that Pat talked about. These people are going to go into fields and be missionaries for the gospel to reach Muslims. And so the one fellow, he's a Manara candidate. Okay. Here we are doing a mosque tour. This is the Yemeni mosque. The next one. And can you see how many rows are there? There's about 50 men in each row. And this is just they had so many people, they had to go to two services on a Friday, because they get about 3,000 people on a Friday. And this is their prayer time. Okay. This is the thing. This is a church from Indiana. They're cooking for us for a week. I mean, there's people mixed together, but that's who it is. And there's babysitting. That's our daughter. Now she has two kids of her own. Go ahead. And my wife. Muhammad. Keep going. Can you see these young ladies? And probably all of them are teenagers, and they all have children. The Yemeni marry very young. Okay. Now this guy, this was at Angel House, and we kept the men and women separate. I was upstairs teaching the men, and so I couldn't go through to go to the copier. I had to go down the back steps around to the front and use the copier and go back again, and I go out, and there's a guy sitting on the sidewalk with suitcases. Well, that's strange. And I talked to him, and he's an Iraqi guy. And he had worked with our special forces many, many years. And his dad says, "You can do this, but just get commendation." And he came with a stack of papers this thick from generals, colonels, captains, of, you know, commending this guy for helping our people. He came there. They expedited a visa for him, and so he came to the United States. He just got a first plane to the United States. He was in Jordan, and there's a direct flight to Detroit. So he came to Detroit, and he got in a taxi. The taxi driver is Indian. He said, "Oh, you're Arabic. I know where you need to go." And he took him to Dearborn and dropped him off in front of us. I talked to him, and then he saw the women. And his eyes got big like this. And guess what he said? "These are the people who are killing your soldiers. These are your enemies." Because what the news is calling insurgents, they're mostly foreign fighters coming in. Coming from Yemen, coming from Libya, coming from, you know, they're foreign Sunni fighters coming in from the outside to kill Americans and Shia. Because they consider them heretics. And so we took him home, and he spent a few days with us, and then he goes, "Oh, I know what you're doing." But I think we have another slide. Yeah, there it is. All the Americans, they just love him, and they said, "When you get to America, there's one thing you got to do. It's go to a garage sale." And I've never seen a sign this big, but he went with my wife up to a garage sale, and they found this sign, so he got his picture taken next to the sign. Okay. Keep going. The nice thing about our center is you meet people and you find out they are people, one-on-one. They're just people, and they need Lord. Keep going. It's all repeat. I'm sorry. It is a theocratic kingdom, and it's a totalitarian regime. Do you know who General Jerry Boykin is? Any of you? He got in trouble because he said, their God's an idol and our God's the true God. He's actually an Assembly of God's pastor also. But that's okay. I think we'll stop. We'll stop that. We go till when? 7:30? Can you put the other one on? There was a church. I was on staff at a little church. We planted another church. But it was also kind of like a split, if you know what I mean. Because they had one mentality, we had another mentality. And the people that didn't like missions all went to that church, more or less. But they grew and they won a lot of people to Christ, and that was a good thing. But they never had a burden for missions. But they were real big in the pro-life movement. And one time we went there to speak, and so this was my message. Yeah, we know this. Go ahead. Yeah, just keep going. So just saying how holy life is because of that God made us in his image. Christ took on the humanity. And then we can be reborn into the divine image. And so are you pro-life? Are you pro-choice? Who would say they're pro-life here? Okay. Anyone pro-choice? I shouldn't ask that. You'd be upset. Keep going. And what is pro-choice? It means the choice is being made by someone, but the person whose life is not in danger is making the choice. Maybe that person's lifestyle is in danger, but their life is not in danger. Not the one whose life is at risk. Okay. Pro-life means giving the choice to the one whose life is at risk. Does that make sense? Okay. And so, missions or evangelism is what? It's giving the choice about life to the one whose life is at risk, whose life will be lost. The Christian's life isn't at risk. It's the lost person's life who's at risk, isn't it? Okay. So if we don't do it, we're being pro-choice. We're saying, I won't give them that person a choice. I'll make the choice for them. I'm going to decide not to tell them. Because it does hinder my lifestyle. It may cost me money, it may cost me time, it may have to go somewhere I don't want to go. I don't know, I forget how far it goes. That's it, okay. You have a few minutes. Do you have any questions? Yes. No, we're not afraid. I didn't bring one here, but I have in the back some of the tracks that we make. And one is so cool. I just love it. It's out of John chapter 9. And it's called, Who is Blind? Because in John chapter 9, he heals the blind man. And it's so cool. It matches up so well with Muslims. Do you remember that story? And the man is blind. Jesus heals him. But he never sees Jesus, does he? Jesus takes mud. He actually spits. Have you seen the Gospel of John DVD? The movie, The Gospel of John? Have you seen that? You need to get that. It's so cool. I think made in 2004. I call it The Lost Jesus. I'm sorry. Brian's shaking his head. Do you know why?
Why you call it The Lost Jesus? I've seen it for a few years.
The actor was in the TV series called Lost. And I forget his character's name there. Desmond. His name is Desmond. Did anybody see Lost? All right, you admit to it. So Desmond, they do a great job in this thing. And so we use it all the time in our ESLs. And so Jesus spits, and his disciples go, whoa, like this, you know, because spitting is gross. And he makes mud, and he puts it on the guy's eyes, and he says, go to the pool of Siloam, which means sent. Go there and wash. And so it's just one done very, very well. And he washes, and of course, he sees, and he's so excited. Has he ever seen Jesus? No. He's heard him, and Jesus touched him, but he was blind. Jesus sent him away, and so he sees, but he hasn't seen Jesus. And so he's coming back, and he's just, you know, looking at the world. He's so happy. And people say, isn't that the blind guy that used to sit and beg? Yeah. No, no, it just looks like him, similar to him. No, he says, it's me. And then they take him before the Pharisees, and they interrogate him, and they said, how did this happen? And he tells them the story. Jesus made mud and put it on my eyes, and he sent me to the pool, and I washed, and now I can see. And has this guy ever been to school? No, he's a very uneducated person. You know, they didn't have school for the handicapped back then. And so this man is as simple as you can get. And they're interrogating him, and they bring his parents in because they don't believe he was blind. Is this your son? Yes, they're afraid because they said anybody that says that Jesus is the Christ will be put out of the synagogue, be excommunicated from the whole community. And they say, yes, that's our son. Was he born blind? Yes, he was born blind. How can he see? So we don't know. We know he's our son and he was born blind. How he can see, we don't know. Ask him. He's old enough. He's like 40 years old. Because they didn't want to get kicked out. Now, isn't that a shame? His parents, instead of celebrating this miracle, they're afraid of the religious leaders. And so if someone in a Muslim family comes to Christ, their families are afraid or they're angry at them. You know, I thought this is a good parallel. So we put this in a tract, and we set it up as a play. There's a lot of dialogue in John, but we wanted to make it more dialogue, so we set it up as a play. And then also the headings, we wanted to quote the scripture, but we also wanted to put some other words in there. So in the headings, like we said, Act 1, Act 2, or something like that, Scene 1, Scene 2, we said things that we wanted to say. And one of them... They said, is it him? No, it just looks like him. Well, the key verse in the Quran that denies the crucifixion of Christ is chapter 4, 157. And it says, the Jews did not crucify him, they did not kill him, neither did they crucify him, but it was only made to appear so to them. So it's the same word appear, but it's in a different form. But in my heading, I made it exactly the same in the Arabic, so that shibahu lahum. That's how it says in the Quran, shibahu lahum. And I wanted those words because all the Muslims don't know the Quran, but they all know some verses. And that's one verse they all know, is that he wasn't crucified. It only appeared so to them. Shabahu lahum. So I wanted them to read that and have that reverberate in their minds that was he crucified or did it only look like that? And the guy says, no, it really is me. It doesn't just look like me, it's me. And that. Well, we were handing out these tracts. To get back to your question. We're handing out these tracts. And I said, we've never had any problem. We've never been threatened or anything like that. So, and we just hang them like pizza flyers on the doors. And so it's pretty low commitment. But we say, as you go, pray for the people, pray for the tracts. And just do this. And it's a lot of fun. And kids do it really fast. And old people do it really slowly. But we go like 10, 15,000 at a time. And sometimes people talk. So just be friendly. And if they don't want it, say, you don't have to take it. It's a free country, you know. And I said, we've never had any trouble. Well, that very day, we went out. And I'm going out. And this young guy about this big, 25 years old. And his friend, same size. He says, I see you're alone. Well, there was another guy about my age across the street. You two guys are alone. I said, yeah. He said, well, people don't like this. People might hurt you. And for some reason, I stepped towards him. I said, who doesn't like this? Well, they might do something. Well, what would they do? Yeah, I just kept stepping towards him, you know, and I don't know why. This boldness came from the Lord, not from me. And He said, well, they don't like this. And he reached out and grabbed it from his friend who had it in his hand. And then he's going like this, so I just took it from him. I said, you don't have to take it. It's a free country. You don't have to read this if you don't want to. But you'll be surprised. Many people do. And I just went to the next house and the next house. And he's standing there like this, you know. But so that was a threat of a threat. I'm kind of slow, so I didn't think about it till later, you know. But no, it's not yet. Now, Islam, like, you know, do you think I love Islam? I don't. It is a system keeping people in bondage. There are many systems like that. Peter said, you were saved from the futility of your forefathers. I forget the exact word. You know it, Pastor? The feudal tradition handed down from your forefathers. So there are many feudal traditions that keep people in bondage. But Islam was a particularly strong one for many reasons. So we want to save people from Islam. Now, I'll tell you something tomorrow there's this new and improved evangelism with a new and improved Bible. And our new and improved gospel. Yeah, it's actually a new and improved Bible. And whenever you improve the Bible, usually that's trouble. Okay? So I'll tell you about that tomorrow. But the gospel is, it's a wonderful thing, and it really is the power of God for salvation for everyone who believes. And God is saving Muslims. He's not saving a lot of them right now. Iranians, as Pat told you, yes, they're coming to Christ. And we have an Iranian family who's come to Christ. And that's really cool. We don't have many Iranians in the whole city. And like this guy said, oh, this is a cool story. Can I take a few minutes? Who went on that tour? Okay, did you see an old man talking to me? About 70 years old? 75? His name is Al. They were in Iran before Pat went to Iran, him and his wife. And they got kicked out when the Shah came. They went to Turkey for a while, and then he came back and was the treasurer at the home office for many years for us. They're now living in Grand Rapids because they got two grandchildren in Grand Rapids. Also, their daughter lives there with the grandchildren. But when he was in Iran, he was running a Bible correspondence course. And there was this kid who, he was in ninth grade. He went to live with his sister for, I think, the summer or the whole year. I don't quite remember which one he said. But he said, a car drives by, and a piece of paper comes floating out of the car, lands in front of him. He picks it up, and he reads it, and it says, if you'd like a gift, fill this out and send it in. So he fills it out, and he sends it in, and it's a Bible correspondence course. And they give him a Bible, and they give him some questions to fill out. He reads it, fills it out, sends it in. They send him another one. He reads it, fills it out, sends it in. He did this for a year. And then he had to leave and go back home, and he lost the address of this place. And so he lost contact. Oh, it also, at the end, it said, come to Tehran and meet your teacher. He's a 14-year-old kid. He couldn't go to Tehran. It was, 100 miles away or something like that. And he couldn't do it. And then he lost the address, and he just lost track of it. Well, this man is very clever. He's a mechanical engineer. He started his factory making bricks and all kinds of things out of brick. I don't know. One day, and he was becoming very wealthy, okay, because he owned the factory and he was running the factory, and a machine got stuck, and he fixed it, and it grabbed his arm and mangled his arm. And it's now useless. He still has it, but he can't do anything with it. It's his right arm. He's right-handed. And he's still running the factory, but, he can't do much. And then a few years ago, there's a thing called the visa lottery. You know about that? People want to come to America. So many people want to come. They use a lottery system. His wife said, should we fill this out? I don't care. Fill it out. She fills it out. They won the lottery. Okay, and he ends up in Dearborn in a city full of Arabs. He says, I hate Arabs. It's a Muslim city. I hate Islam. And he said, why? He says, why did that paper come to me? Why did my arm get stuck in the machine? Why did I get a visa? And why am I in Dearborn? I said, those are good questions. God wants you to know him. God wants you to come to Christ, faith in Christ. And if you were still healthy and rich in Iran, would you come to America? No. And so God had you catch your arm in the machine so that you would say, America's better than here. Plus, he hates the government. Many Iranians do. But why Dearborn? So you could meet us, so we could tell you about Christ, even though we don't speak Farsi. Well, we brought Al and Diane over. They were so thrilled to talk to Al and Diane. And then he said to Al, what were you doing in Iran? I was running a Bible correspondence course. And I'm about to cry. The next time Al came, he brought the book that he filled out, a copy of the book. And so we think the whole family's come to Christ. It's a man, wife, and three daughters, and a little tiny, spoiled, rotten kid of 5 years old who runs the house, little boy. I don't think he's saved yet. So that's some of the joys that we have. You know, who did that? Dick, who did that? Who arranged that?
Oh, God is a big arranger.
Isn't that something? Isn't that great of God to do that? And so the Ahmed, I think he can even say, that's okay, you know? He has this dead arm hanging down. All right, let's stop and come back tomorrow, and I'll tell you some more things, and you can ask whatever questions you want and look at the literature out there. Pastor, would you like to lead us in prayer?